Are we on? Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon, members and guests. Today, we're delighted to have Basil Power with us to show us the slides from his new book. First of all, if you'll just bear with me, a couple of items of housekeeping. Next Monday, we have Gordon Krowitz, who is the former publisher of the Wall Street Journal, talking about whether or not journalism can make money on the web. That's the hot topic of the moment. And then on the 2nd of December, we have John Micklethwaite, who is the editor-in-chief of The Economist, talking about journalism, The Economist, and mass intelligence. So I hope you'll turn up to those two lunches. And first of all, before we start, can I just ask you to switch off your phones, please? Now, Basil, what can we say about Basil? I'm sure you all know Basil from seeing him around the bar. And can I say, as a female member, we're very appreciative of Basil for keeping up the sartorial elegance on the male side of the membership. Sometimes we think he's the only one who does. Now, Basil has had a long and distinguished career, and I won't go into all of that, but for the last 20 years, he has traveled the world with Michael Palin as the stills photographer for the BBC travel series, and he's published many, many books on this subject, as I'm sure you know. Now, today he's going to show us landscape photos taken mainly over the last 20 years in the Shamshoy tradition. Now, I'll let him explain, but basically it's landscapes without people. So, little tiny people. There will be a wall exhibition of his work in January. First of all, the I Ching series of pictures up till Chinese New Year. And then after that, the landscapes from the book that he's about to show us now. Now, after he's showed us the slides and given his talk, if anybody has any questions, we'll have a few minutes for questions. So here's Basil.
Who get to hear my nonsense every night and still pay to come to lunch. Yes, welcome to this first Sanshui presentation, or as my friends suggested, it should be called Chop Sui, because it really is all the slide that's been hanging around the shelves for a long time, and I'm just throwing it into a book. I'm hoping that it's a little more than that by grouping 20 years worth of traveling. I've never really published my landscapes. So this is the first time I've made an attempt to group all those pictures together as a tribute, really, to the planet and to all these places I've been privileged to go to, thanks to mostly to Palin. Now, Sanshui, we generally associated nowadays with the very spontaneous ink wash paintings. But in fact, when it first started, it was really, it was more an art movement that involved poetry, began as poetry, and also gardening in the late Tang Dynasty is when it came into play. So I think we don't have much time. I did have So I'll start with the pictures and go from there. As we know, the Tang Dynasty was possibly the most successful dynasty in Chinese history, and it began actually. I should read you this, because it's originally the opening of the. Of my introduction to the book. So on July 2nd, the year 626, Li Shimin, the Prince of Qin, ambushed and assassinated two of his rival brothers, the Crown Prince Li Jiangchang and Prince Li Yuanji, in the infamous incident at the Xuanwu Gate. Soon afterwards, his father Li Yuan, the founder of the Tang Dynasty, who had himself invaded the capital, Chang'an, and seized the throne from his first cousin, Emperor Yang of Sui Dynasty, was forced to abdicate. Li Ximin ascended the throne with the temple name of Tang Zhaizong, Supreme Emperor of Tang, and from this orgy of Shakespearean plots emerged the beginnings of one of the most successful dynasties in the history of China and the golden age of Chinese civilization. Tang cultural influences were so powerful and indelible that to this day, Chinatowns across the globe are still called Tang Renji, Tang People's Street. Now, you can understand why that didn't get used. I mean, first, it was a grotesque exploitation of the violence tendency of the younger generation. But that actually was the beginning, because Li Ximin turned out to be an incredible emperor. This Tang Taizong, he created the atmosphere for something like the Sanshui movement to come about, because through his reforms, etc., China basically controlled for the Tang Dynasty, controlled for the next over 200-something years the Silk Road trade. And through the Silk Road, Buddhism came in. It was the most sort of open-minded imperial court China's ever had. So from this came the system, and he created the first officials, kind of official scholar official class, and they're the ones who are sitting around playing the chin, playing chess, painting, writing calligraphy, writing poetry, and it became an art movement. So I took I basically took the structure of Sanshui painting, which is paths, threshold, and heart. These are the elements that makes up the Sanshui painting. I took that and basically arranged my pictures into these sections. We will go to them now. Now, paths. Here it says, pathway should never be straight. This is the first element. This is the first element of the Sanshui painting. Pathway should never be straight. They should meander like a stream and help deepen the landscape by adding layers, etc. So this group is... This is the Pangla Pass in Tibet, which is 17,000 feet, 5,100 meters up. And that's the central Himalayan range, all in one view. Now we're looking at the Blue Nile Falls, which is known as smoking water in the local language. This is a scene coming on the going from Wadi Halfa to Khartoum on the Nubian Desert on the Nile Valley Express, which was very uncomfortable. And then this is even more uncomfortable. We got off the train in Atbara, which is about 190 miles from Khartoum, and we got into this truck which had no windows. And we went across the desert towards Khartoum. And by the time we got to Khartoum at night, we were covered. There was a sort of blinding sandstorm just swept in, just came right through the truck, and that covered everything. And we walked into the Khartoum Hilton, always just completely covered in mud. So that's the part, and in the distance is the Nile. It's a particularly fine tree just outside of Jenny. This is going through the Tanneray Desert in Niger or Niger. The Chinguetti, the sand seas in Chinguetti. There's something very odd about photographing dunes. I mean, as you can see, this is what Palin calls the date box, picture that you put on a date box. this kind of sand dunes. And the interesting thing about that is that it actually, at sunset, it's various landscapes that are photographed at best at different times, and mostly sunrise and sunset. And I, for me, the dunes, it just somehow it traps the light wherever I've been in terms of deserts. Wherever I've been, the sunset, the sand somehow traps the light, and the sunset seems to go on forever. And it's more Chinguetti. It's the Hoga Mountains in shot from a place called Axakram in Algeria, the Hoga Mountains at sunrise. That was really uncomfortable too. Actually, mostly these pictures reminds me of how uncomfortable these journeys were. But that's another thing I found out from when I was assembling this collection, is that the more uncomfortable, the harder it is to get to, the better the pictures. And so the book is really about all the horrible times I've spent on the road. And we had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to climb up to the top of the mountain. And the night before, we were in freezing cold in one room. The whole crew were lying right next to each other in sleeping bags. It was insane. It was like no grown person should be doing stuff like that. But anyway, this is a shot of the Hoga Mountains. And I think it was probably worth it. I mean, it's just, not many people get to go there. And this is at a place called Innamenis, or something like that. I'm not very good with my pronunciation. It's a kind of oil town. There's only about 5,000 people there. And it's on the border between Libya and Algeria. And that tree, that one tree, marks the border. Now we're in Cappadocia. I'm sure some of you will recognize Cappadocia as a very unique landscape, still one of the most beautiful places around, and quite easy to get to. The land of beautiful horses, or something like that, they call it. The Persians call it the land of beautiful horses. This is western Afghanistan. This is taken from a plane on a flight from Kabul to Dubai. And soon after that, they took all my Christmas presents. They just took them all. Yeah, they just. So I never go back to Dubai anymore. I refuse to go back to Dubai because the bastards absolutely took every. Anyway, they. Anyway, I don't want to go into that. I don't want to get sidetracked. No, I had a coin. I had an Alexander, a sort of replica of a coin of Alexander, which I was going to, Bactrian coin, I was going to give to my daughter, because she loves Alexander. She studies history, right? So I was really looking forward to giving that to her. And I got that on Chicken Street. You've heard of Chicken Street in Kabul, which is an antique street. So I got that. I was really excited, plus all the little presents for my friends. Bastards in Dubai just took them all because they said, well, this coin may be real. I said, you think I'd be walking around with a real Bactrian coin? Do you know how many of those there are? I have armed guards if I had one of those. Anyway, this is coming out from Kabul. This, as you can see, is the Bandiama Lakes, which is the most incredible blue that I have ever seen in my life. The picture doesn't really do it justice. It is such a fantastic blue. You can just see all the minerals in it, and it's just a stunning place. And this is the road to Bamiyan. If you're traveling from Xinjiang over the desert into India, this is where you have to pass through to get to Bamiyan, and then to what was then Gandhara, or whatever, however you. To get to India. So you would have seen this lake if you were traveling back then. And this is what you see next. This is the Valley of the Dragons that's leading into Bamyan. And this is the famous Bamyan. Excuse me, this is the famous Bamyan Valley. Of course, now we're all associated with the Taliban blowing up the Buddhas in 2001. But this was a fabled place, our publisher would tell you, who did the wonderful book on Afghanistan. This is the Xuan Zheng, the famous Chinese monk who inspired the Monkey King, the journey to the West. His journey, he passed through here in 630, and he in his book, he recorded over 10 monasteries with more than 1,000 monks living here, a lot of them in the caves, meditating in the caves, painting the caves, making statues. And also the other, and then the next sort of famous visitor was Genghis Khan, who around 1221 came and lay siege to the valley. In one battle, his favorite grandson got killed. And this is what I was thinking when I was sitting up there thinking about when I took this picture, was he got so angry that he killed every living thing in the valley. I mean, imagine not even the sound of a bird or anything, just killed everything. He absolutely, that's the legend anyway. but then he had to retreat. I mean, relating to present day, even Genghis Khan had to back off. In the end, he couldn't take Afghanistan, and it's just nobody can, basically. this is the road going up to Shandur Pass, where they play the highest, the game of polo, according to centuries-old rules. In Pakistan, up in between Chitral and Gilgit. It's been going on for years, and it's about 11,000 feet up altitude-wise. And that's K2 on the border between China and Pakistan. We were taken up there by the Pakistan Army in helicopters, and they couldn't land because it was warm and the snow was soft. So we had to jump. We had to jump off the hovering helicopters, and of course, everybody got in knee deep. As soon as they jump in, the snow was soft and got knee deep. Well, I had all my cameras. I was down to my waist. I jumped. It took me a while to get back out. But one thing about these mountains, when we did the Himalayas, that I found out, just going back to photography for a minute, is they tend to look better if you're up slightly higher up. It's like getting up on a ladder to shoot this room. When you're from the bottom, you're looking up, and it's the scale and everything, the shapes. You don't actually get to see the shape of the mountains. This is shot from a helicopter as we're leaving. And that dirt track on the left is the original Silk Road on the river Indus, in the Hindu Kush. The road that we travel on now, the Karakoram Highway, is actually now on the right. But that dirt track, I was told, anyway, by the natives, was the original Silk Road. This is on what is now the Chinese side of the Karakoram Highway in Xinjiang. The vista tend to just broaden out on the Chinese side. On the Pakistani side is all very vertical, and suddenly it opens up as soon as you get to the other side. This is the famous Flaming Mountains in Turfan. Again, Xuan Zheng came through here, and the famous episode of the Monkey King fighting with the Buffalo King and his witch of a wife happened here. This is the beginning of the Karakoram track. Not Karakoram, sorry, the Mount Kailash track. You probably know Mount Kailash is for the the Bon religion, the Buddhas, the Hindu, and the Jains is the most holy mountain in the world. I mean, its resemblance to Mount Meru is stunning. It stands in the center of four rivers that flow from into four directions that supply water for the whole world. I mean, for the world as they know it. This is the beginning of the track as you go in. The track itself, the Kora, is 52 kilometers. Holy moly, really? 32 miles. So the whole Kora, you go around the mountain, is 52 kilometers. This is the beginning. And some people can do it in one day. Some Tibetans can do it in one day. And there it is, at sunrise, Mount Kailash, the holiest mountain in Asia. And it's the only significant peak at 22,000 feet that's never been climbed. And that's the one everybody climbs. That's the north face of Everest, taken from Rongbok. We were at, you all know how high it is, but we were at about, Rongbok was about 17,000 feet. And there's where I discovered the joy of smoking. Whereas I was having trouble, and then I thought, I'm having trouble breathing. Well, maybe I have a cigarette. And then later on, I actually managed to almost convince this my doctor, who's a lung specialist, who said, okay, the thing is, walking around Central is about 10,000 feet, you know? So I don't need as much oxygen. So up there, I'm okay. I had a cigarette and a cup of tea, and I was fine. This is the Annapurna from this village where they were recruiting Gurkhas. And the story is, I'm sure you've heard it from Palin, the story is our leaders got kidnapped. The British Army people who were recruiting the Gurkhas, they got kidnapped by the Maoists. But this is the view from our campsite. And basically, next morning when they didn't show up, we ran for it. We just packed up and just ran for it. We literally ran out of there with our packs. That's the famous Fishtail Mountain. And I was practically dying when I took the shot, because I had flu that I picked up in Nepal, and all the way tracking up to here, to this point, it was progressively getting worse. So by the time I took this picture, I thought I was going to die. But the thing that's actually dying, which is shocking, is that I saw pictures a year ago. Friends of mine went and they took pictures of it in the middle of winter, of this same peak, and it was bare. It had no snow. The glacier had receded, and this mountain was brown. It had no snow on it. And it was in March, in the middle of winter. We now move to Russian Far East. In Kamchatka, in the Kanai National Park, huge area. That you can only move around in a helicopter. It takes the wood, the people who sort of the forest. What do you call those people? The rangers. Yeah, it would take them sort of 2 weeks to walk out into civilization from their shacks. So they were very keen to see us arrive with a helicopter so they can hitch a ride to go pick up supplies. This is actually inside the mouth of a volcano and going into the Valley of Geysers. Okay, and this is on our way to that volcano. This is very high up. It's one of the highest mountains, and the helicopter can only hang in there for a few minutes for us to get the shots. And it's quite an amazing sight. This is, of course, Ayers Rock or Uluru from the air. Can you see the little people on that on top? Right on top, you might not be able to see it in this, but there's their little people, tourists, on the upper edge. Mount Cook, or near Mount Cook, the Tasman Glacier in New Zealand. This is the south coast of Chile. From the airplane. Torres del Paine, the national park. So the most, I would say, the one place I want to go back to the most is this place, I think, in terms of going and visiting and taking more snaps. I think this is the place. It's the most beautiful place, geographically, the most beautiful place I've ever seen. Again, the park and lake with salt. This is further up the Andes. This is up the Andes in the Atacama Desert. And we're at about 8,000 feet here. This is called the Valley of Death. And that train track you see in the middle is for a train bus, which is sort of like one rail. At that time, it was about 30 years old train. At 30 years old, was built in Germany, and it's like a bus, it's a cross between a bus and a train, and travels on this rail, and it goes from Acre. What is that port name? Acre something, to La Paz. So you actually go over the Andes on the Altiplano. Up to, on the Chilean border, it's about 13,000 feet. So you're basically pretty woolsey all the way to La Paz from what's the name of the name? Acata something. But anyway, it's on the coast, it's sea level. So you go from sea level to 13,000 feet on this bus ride, on this bus train ride. And that's a great trip. It's a great way to go into La Paz if you're planning on going there. That's Lake Titicaca. I know it looks like more like an ocean, but trust me, it's a lake. This is the Amazon in Peru, or a bit of the Amazon. So the second. Of the sanctuary thing, as it were, is the threshold. The threshold is, the paths will lead you into the picture, and the threshold is supposed to be there to welcome you, embrace you, and take you in further into the picture. So this second group of picture is sort of one step beyond the other landscapes, which are mostly snaps. Well, these are sort of slightly more different snaps. Another aerial shot, which I guess basically they're just more abstract, and you start to imagine more rather than just recognizing features of a landscape. You start to imagine the actual landscapes. It's in Dhaka. It's in Bhutan, little temple in Bhutan. That's the Victoria Falls from the Zambia side, from the Zambia side. And you see that far bit at the end, and on the left-hand side? Well, I actually did one of the craziest things in my life, which was to go whitewater rafting. And we sort of went past there. And I can't swim, so it was not a bright thing to do. And the sound man described me as like a, what is it? Soap on a rope. And we're just hanging on for dear life. And the bizarre thing was, I did it because I thought, hey, I have to do it. A sense of duty calls for risking your life, going into these stupid rapids. And then later on, the only shot I used from there was from the bridge when we were crossing the border from Zambia into Zimbabwe. It was a great, and so the best shot was actually I shot from on top on the bridge on solid ground. The shots that I did on the boat were practically not usable. And it was like Chinese torture because the camera boat had to go first. No, camera boat would go to the edge of the white water, And then we would climb onto the shore and hike to the other side of the white water, and set up to shoot Palin going through. And then we have to walk back and go through it. So when Palin disappears, we're about 50 seconds, a minute underwater. We know what we're in for. It was like Chinese water torture. This is the Alaskan coast. Very, very dramatic. And then this is the, again, so we're back to towards our plane. We're now into, I took the word threshold to mean, as I also, because my influence is more Western paintings, you know, Renaissance, etc. And then their landscape tradition, there is the whole school of the sublime, with the clouds and, you know, the American school. And then you have Turner. All these people have, and I consider their paintings to be part of this threshold grouping, you know, particularly people like Turner, who are on the threshold of the sublime, as it were. They're trying to find that through the paintings, through the way they paint. And this is what I tried to do with the pictures, is sort of get to try to, the difference between photographing people, the people is always sort of about the moment, that moment. Landscapes to a certain extent is also about catching a certain moment when the light hits in a certain way or the clouds are moving in a certain way. But it's a kind of emotional resonance as well that you try to put in, that gives the landscape life. Without that, it's just another pretty landscape. This is another time of the same scene. So this is going up the fjords of Chile at sunset. This is Puerto Natales, which is the jumping off point for Cape Horn. This is where the Chilean Navy have their base. This is where we got on the frigate to go to Cape Horn. And that's just, I don't know how typical it is because we were only there for a day and this was the sunrise. This is another scary bit. This is sort of like white water rafting up in the air. We were on this little tiny plane coming back from the crocodile farm in Arnhem Land somewhere, and then suddenly this thing started coming at us from the distance. We see it coming, this huge storm just comes sweeping across. And then the plane just started shaking. It just, soon after I got the shot, that we were enveloped by the storm and we were just shaking like crazy, but we somehow landed, somehow got through it. But there's nothing like backlit water, you know? Backlit water is just cannot be beat. The previous picture probably is more responsible for me wanting to do a Sanchez series than anything else, because it's so much like a Chinese painting, the sky. Where they were pouring pouring the ink, not even using brush, they just sort of throw it. That whole school of throwing ink wash. This is Lake Tanganyika, another very uncomfortable trip on a boat. Yep, that's it, bloody uncomfortable. And this was is a snowstorm that came across from Lake Manasarova, the holy lake in Western Tibet. Which is also part of the whole pilgrimage circuit of Kailash. Oh, source of the Manasarovas, I think it's source of the Indus River. I think, I may be wrong. This is another snowstorm on the Kundra Pass, which I think means sort of passage of death or something, because people, that's if you're traveling along the Silk Road, that's normally when you get robbed. But there weren't anybody around that day. This is about 10 or 20 km from the Pakistan border, from the Chinese Pakistan border on the Karakoram Highway. but the road had eroded because of the snow, etc., and we couldn't get to the Pakistan borders. This is as far as I got. This is Patriot Hills in Antarctica. Those guys, these are the people, they were burning off, I think they were either burning garbage or burning off excess oil from the tins before the plane lands, because you have to carry everything out. They're the only people, there is a Canadian group, they're the only people apart from the government research stations, they're the only private group that actually flies into Antarctica. And it's not because you're not allowed, because nobody actually claimed Antarctica. They just all put stations there, put research stations there. But it's because when you fly there, you have to depend on the government stations to give you info on the weather. Because halfway across, if the weather turns on you, you're dead, because you don't have enough gas to go back. And there's nowhere to land to refuel. So Patriot Hills is like the only place where you can operate, because they have a relationship with the Chilean station, the scientific station there. But you have to carry everything out, back out with you, including your poop. So and then that takes us to the last part of the book, which is the heart. The heart is, well, it's self-explanatory. This is the whole purpose of the picture. You've been taken through these meandering streams of paths into the threshold, which welcomes you, and now you're in the heart of the picture. And it's what the whole Sanctuary thing is about, is that the whole movement in terms of painting is that it's not what you see. They never painted what they saw. It's how they've interpreted what they've experienced from nature, what they've seen from nature, and how what they thought about it, and then put onto paper. So I've associated with the imagination. And this part is probably best without any comment. I think it's time to go. I think they're trying to tell us something. Sorry, didn't know I was that boring. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Basil. And even though you're a member, you get the FCC present.
Ooh. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming.
Any questions from anybody?
Basil, wonderful images. Could you give us a quick run through on the camera equipment you used?
Oh.
Very quick.
In the beginning, it was Nikon, which I guess is the F. And then when autofocus came along, Nikon was just very far behind Canon, so I switched completely to Canon. I shoot with, most of the time, just two lenses, 17 to 35 for the wide, on two to three camera bodies, cameras, because I don't like changing lenses, so I shoot with zoom. And the other one is 75 to, 200. Yeah, so the telephoto lens and the wide lens, so I can just pick it up and shoot whenever I want without really thinking about it. I take snaps, so it's important that I can just pick up the camera and take the snap without thinking. And I think that's it. And now I shoot Canon digital because it's using the old lenses, and it's the frame is it's like shooting on film because it's full frame. So yeah, so I use the Canon 5, whatever we call it, D5 or whatever, 5D Mark II, right. Does that answer your question? I shot with Fujichrome Velvia before when I was shooting film. Sad, makes me want to cry.
Just a quick one. What's that?
Oh, well, it's art, Squire. No, it's actually a run. What do you call those things where they collect water into reservoirs? Huh? Spillway. Catchment. It's like a catchment spillway, but shot from kind of. I was on the road, and the water is just sort of coming out step by step. And it's just, it's a wall. It's a wall with water running over it, okay? Anyone else? That's it?
Excellent.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, and good night. Now let's hear the fat lady sing.
Oh, and just...
Hooks at the door if anybody...
Alice. Right, sorry.